It's Friday, April 14th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Lubbock, Texas. Well, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast. I actually had wanted to start podcasting excerpts from a wonderful presentation at the SITE conference in Orlando at the end of March on digital storytelling, but unfortunately I cannot find that file, and I fear it may have been deleted off of my iPod or my computer or never transferred to my computer in the first place. So in lieu of doing some short excerpts from that, I will share the introduction to my workshop, which I shared at the SITE conference. And the workshop is called Welcome to Web 2.0. And this is really just about 35 or so minutes at the beginning of the session, where I started off by introducing Web 2.0, or what my understanding of Web 2.0 or the read-write web is, by telling three specific stories that sort of highlight both what Web 2.0 is and what the possibilities of Web 2.0 are. So I would welcome, as always, any comments or feedback that you have on this podcast in the podcast blog entry at www.speedofcreativity.org, or you can always contact me by visiting www.wesfryer.com and clicking the contact link. Have a fantastic day wherever you happen to be in cyberspace and on the planet.
Today's workshop could certainly be a fire hose of information, because there is so much that has changed really in the last year in terms of online resources and this idea of a web that we both read and we write. Mm-hmm. The Sun Microsystem dream, maybe, of this idea of using a computer sort of as a terminal where we access resources on the network that really allow us to do whatever we want to do, isn't here yet, but I think we're, you know, light years ahead of where we were a number of years ago. So the abstract for this obviously talks about a new age and what Web 2.0 is. And what I'd like to do first is, if you haven't already, underneath number one here, where it says start with a short online survey, there's 10 questions. And if you can click that and take that, it'll give us a little idea of kind of where we are. Of course, we're a small group, so we can also just talk about that.
I have no's on almost all of them.
What's that?
I have no on almost all of
them.
Okay,
well, good. Well, good. Yeah. And the thing about this is, new tools are literally coming out every day, and it's exciting that you all are working in the field of computer science, because the students that you teach, you know, are going
to
be the students, the people who are writing the next Web 2.0 application. Mm-hmm. And the technical know-how to create those things is a world apart from the basic knowledge we need to use them as students, as teachers, as consumers, and things like that. So there are people, and I've spoken to them at this conference, and I've listened to their podcasts, and I've read their blogs, who say, I don't think it's that big of a deal. We've been putting audio on the internet for a long time. Mm-hmm. We've been putting text on the internet since the internet started. Mm-hmm. What's the big deal? And I am one to say it is truly a revolution. Nothing shorter than Gutenberg's invention of the printing press. Now that's a huge claim, because when you think about what happened with the Reformation and the spread of ideas and the fall of the power of the church, I mean, goodness gracious, tremendous impact. But I truly believe that these tools are enabling a conversation to take place across the globe that's unprecedented. And the fact that you're from New York and you're from Japan and I live in Texas. I'm at the College of Education at Texas Tech, I should say. I am a graduate student defending my dissertation this summer, looking for a job in the fall, and have been with our college for 5 years as the director of distance learning and the director of instructional support services, which is not printers, viruses, or email, but other things.
Yeah.
And I taught school for 6 years before that. I'm just blown away by several things. So I'm going to start by telling you three stories, and then we'll look at the survey results, because when you go to this short online survey, you might have noticed that the website is called SurveyMonkey, Mm-hmm. And when you cut off everything for this survey and just go to SurveyMonkey, this is a revolutionary tool because people can create online surveys for free and administer those over the web and grab the data and, you know, create sophisticated branching things. Now, this will let you do a 10-question survey for free, but frequently in workshops now I will use this because I think that when we experience something, it has a lot more potential to change us and become part of what we're doing and what we use, what we know, than when we're just told about it. So you're taking a SurveyMonkey survey, and then we're going to look at the results of it just as a way of both seeing this Web 2.0 tool and accomplishing some goals of our workshop, but also familiarizing you with the tool. So before I tell those stories, just as an outline, we'll go till 12 today, and so when we're ready, we'll take a break. I'm thinking probably somewhere around, you know, 9:30 or 10, but let's just kind of see what we want to do. And as a good teacher generally does, I have more content that we will have time for. But the good news is everything is linked from this website that you all have now found, and I'll be showing you resources where, on a weekly basis, maybe not a daily basis, but pretty much a weekly basis, I am adding to the list because more tools are being created and shared, and it's a dynamic thing. From the time I submitted this back in October or whenever it was to today, there's a whole host of other tools and skills that we'll consider Web 2.0 technologies that we're using. So let me start by telling you these three stories. And the first one concerns an international Skype cast. I didn't include that as a survey question, but have any of you used Skype, or are you familiar with Skype? There may be some things. Skype, I would say, fits into the category of a communication and interaction tool rather than a Web 2.0 tool. But obviously the use of these things very much gets blended. Skype has been purchased by eBay now, and it is, as far as I know, the largest community of voice over IP folks in the world. It's a free client that you can download for Mac, for Windows, for Linux, and you talk for free. And that's incredible. And there are all kinds of things with each of these tools we'll talk about today that you can do with them. It's really just limited by your creativity and the creativity of others. So when I say not only can you talk to anybody in the world, but you can also have conference calls, and it's also possible to record what you do. And about a year ago, some people invented something called podcasting, which means that you can not only put those radio, those audio programs on the internet, but people can subscribe to them and then, you know, pull that information as soon as it's created rather than waiting for somebody to push it to them. It's a powerful formula. And so Skype is a program that I have used quite a few times, but twice, to do what we've called an international Skype cast. And so the link on our handout, and for everything that we're going to talk about today, I'll have a link on our workshop page. And if you want to watch what I do, that's fine. If you want to link to it, but the resources are there. And I will try to add a link if there is something that I don't already have there that we talk about. So this link to International Skypecast, the global conversation, actually is to my blog, which is called Moving at the Speed of Creativity. And there's a couple links to some audio files and to some text files. Last week was spring break in Texas, and my family and I went up to Kansas, where my folks live, and I had been working on setting up for about a week or two another Skype cast with three other people that live in very distant places. We had Darren Kropotkla, and I guess I can go ahead and I'll link. This is the podcast blog entry, and down here below is a link to the actual podcast. And, well, let me play a little bit of this, and then maybe we can go to some of these links. But this will give you a little flavor of, and I actually didn't, well, we're not plugged into the hardwire internet, so we'll see how quickly this download. This is being hosted for free on a place called the Internet Archive that I have listed at the bottom of our workshop under other resources. And the Internet Archive will host any audio or video file for free. Of course, you need the copyright rights in order to share that. But
are you not using iTunes U?
Well, no, but people do subscribe to my podcast through iTunes. But in order to do that, your institution basically makes a deal with Apple, and then they're hosting it. So this is being hosted outside, and whatever institution or university I might go to, I don't have to worry about the link changing, and oh gosh, they took that down because this is being hosted somewhere else. Okay, let me make sure I don't blow you all out. We'll just play up.
It's Thursday, March 16th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Manhattan, Kansas.
It's actually music my now 8-year-old son doing the garage band that I use in my podcast.
And he welcome to the second international Skype cast, which I guess we haven't officially christened with
English. In other words, what's the difference between that and a podcast?
Okay, what you're about to hear is the recording of our conversation.
Right. Okay.
And so we had Darren in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Ewan McIntosh in Edinburgh, Scotland, my friend Miguel Gulen, who's in San Antonio, Texas,
and I'm, in this case,
in Manhattan, Kansas at my house.
Uh-huh.
My parents have a DSL high-speed connection, and I'm plugged in, and I'm using Skype, and we're conferenced together. Now, the first time we did this, it was 10:30 p.m. Central Time. Manitoba is U.S. Central Time also. 10:30 for Darren, Miguel, and I. 4:30 in the morning, I think, for Ewan.
Yeah.
This time it was 2:30, and our time, and I think it was something a lot more reasonable for Ewan. I think
what's
it was
the maximum number of people that could be connected?
Currently 5, but that's going to probably just continue to go up.
But we've toyed with some ideas, like over the pond and through the fiber.
Let me just jump into later parts of it.
I've been looking at it and preparing for today's conversation.
It seems to me
that he pulled a couple of quotes out of Friedman's book.
Talking about the world is flat. So that's Darren talking a little bit.
Experience and to be more engaged with learning. But
that's me.
And I was really taken aback at how...
This is Ewan in Scotland.
how do you get this across? At how blatant the kids were when they were sending comments. They were sending rude comments. David Warlick's...
Okay, and Miguel is there too.
Yeah.
So, what's happened with this? We have posted this on the web, and a dialogue has ensued that has been international in scope. One of the links on that page is to another blog post by a gentleman named David Warlick. Now, you can actually see pictures of several of us involved in this Skype cast. Miguel is there with the blue shirt and the glasses. Bottom left is Darren, who's in Canada. He's a pre-calculus teacher at a high school, the director of his math department. And the photo on the right there, that's a little darker, is Ewan, who's in Scotland at Edinburgh in the College of Education. And then that's Jeff Allen, with the beautiful trees in the background, who lives in near Seattle in the Northwest. He and a third grade teacher named Mark Allness joined us as guests. So let's scroll down here, because one of the things that I'll talk about as an essential characteristic of the read-write web is how you can use the web as a platform, but also how interactivity and sharing is just built in to most of these tools. So most blogs will have commenting, where anybody can come and leave a comment. And so as I scroll down here, this is the long blog entry that David Warlick did. Look, there are 15 comments. Now, this happened last week. So I happen to know that's Con McEwen, who is in the Northwest as well. But I don't know where all these other people are for. Malone, Crosby, there's Ewan, some Brett Moeller. Ewan replies back. David Warlick that posts it replies. Ewan replies. Jeff Bodine.
Is there any way of controlling entry into the blog? Like, say, if I did it for a class and controlled who actually...
Absolutely. And I'm going to show you today how to do that, because it's called moderating comments.
Right.
And like the blog we've been doing for the site conference, you can control access to who are the authors or posters of the blog, and they're invited to join, and then they're not anonymous, so you know if they're doing, you know, in the case of students, they're not able to anonymously create a new post on the blog when you're team blogging. And then, like Mark Allness, who is, and I'll, actually we can link to his. So these are all hyperlinks, so you can go to each of these people's blog if they have one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a picture of Mark. He's a third grade teacher in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
He moderates the comments on his blog, and I'm going to tell a story about one of his students here in a minute. But yes, absolutely. So here is this international conversation that has happened. Brett replies back, Dave replies back, Matt replies, Crosby replies. You know, it's just amazing. In fact, I think, I don't remember if I thought I was going to reply last night. Maybe I don't think I did. So
can you see this as a threaded conversation?
No, and that's an interesting question, and that's one that we've explored this week at the site conference, is what is the right tool? And so that's something that I hope you'll share ideas with me about, because it's like a menu that we have today. We have WebCT. We can be behind this firewall protect environment, Blackboard. You all have a content management system that you all use, like Blackboard, or you use WebCT. We use WebCT too. I've been working with it for 5 years, helping faculty with it. So that's a protected environment behind a login that's not public, but it's threaded, and it has some benefits. But one of the things that we'll talk about, especially with the blogs today, is how amazingly easy it is for someone to enter this conversation. I don't know that WebCT is super hard, but I have a different perspective because I've been working with it for a long time. For someone who's never, you know, interacted with a course management system before, I know because I've had students and faculty tell me, gosh, this is complicated. You know, all I want to do is put a file up there. You know, all I want to do is, you know, And so it is possible to control it, and it is possible to also even make it a private conversation. But the real power of Web 2.0 is the fact that it's global. So this is the conversation that has happened. David Warlick has even posted a podcast. There's another podcast that, let me put in room 208 blog.
When you have the audio, are they always streaming? Is there streaming audio that you use?
No, it's actually in this case, in most cases, an MP3 file that you're just downloading to your computer. So the benefit of that is you can time and place shift.
Right.
And that's what podcasting is, that's why it's so exciting. I don't know if you all remember, Slobodan Milosevic just died in the last 2 weeks. And I remember in the mid-90s when the Bosnia crisis was happening, people were really excited about B92, which was a Belgrade-based radio station that was anti-government, anti-Milosevic, and he had shut them down. And I think they moved to the Netherlands. And for free speech, that was a huge thing. However, in the mid-90s, you still were chained to your computer when you wanted to listen to B92. Now, you can, with a podcast, you know, download something to, this is an iPod Nano, but it doesn't have to be an iPod, you don't have to have this. You can listen to that, as we just did, on the computer. But when you have a device, which are becoming cheaper and cheaper, and more powerful, then you can time and place shift, listen to it wherever you want, whenever you want. You know, oh gosh, this is an hour long. Well, fine, listen to 15 minutes, pause, you know, and come back to it. So this is another example of a classroom blog, and we're gonna. One of the main things we're talking about today are blogging, and I'm going to show you how to set that up and the ways that it can be customized to be used with students and things like that. But this is a blog by a gentleman named Bob Sprankle that teaches in Maine, in Wells, Maine, and he was featured in the New York Times last summer, and David Warlick had recommended me to him. One of the things that I'm going to really talk about is this conversation and the way in which educators today, I don't know if you all went to the keynote yesterday, but he talked about when ICT integration happens, there are these key elements that need to be there and other things, but one of them was entrepreneurship and the network that educators have. Do you have other colleagues that you can draw on that may be in your local place or they may be somewhere else to help you learn and help you grow? Web 2.0, for me, is all about communication and networking and conversation. So here's Bob Sprankle that's in Maine, and he has posted an entire podcast that is about this particular conversation, defining and telling the new story. And so, anyway, that's my first story to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
That, wow, I was on spring break last week in Kansas, had done a little bit of setup, but used free software tools,
mm-hmm.
because everything that I did here, with the exception of the recording program, I think it was about a $30 shareware program I used to record anything on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Audio Hijack.
Mm-hmm.
So I can hijack the audio from, you know, anything that's streaming or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of that, all free tools. Okay? So you get this idea that Web 2.0 is about a conversation. Some people, especially the press, who don't understand blogs, will portray them as just online diaries. And it's true. If you go to Blogger, as we will today, and you click random blog, it'll just send you through them. You will see a lot of people talking about, what? Me.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I did. I went, my car got a flat today, and oh, that's horrible, and I just can't stand my car. Okay, that's fine. People are doing that. But it is a total and really tragic misrepresentation of Web 2.0 to think that's what blogs are all about for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a communication tool, and yes, a lot of people are documenting their lives. Kids on MySpace and Zanga and Bebo and these other sites are disclosing much more than they should about themselves, and those are issues.
Mm-hmm.
But that tends to be what sort of polarizes the discussion in the media, and people who don't get blogs,
mm-hmm.
are not, I think, seeing that it's about conversation. Kids understand this, and that's why they're into social networking. That's why they're into instant messaging, because they have an inherent, as I think we all do, intrinsic desire to communicate and to socially interact. Okay, so blogging, Web 2.0 is about conversation. Let me tell you story number two. I'm going to link to this second link, which says third grade Danielle blogging in Seattle. And this is a story that I shared in Texas with educators at our state technology conference in February. And I will zoom in here a little bit so that you can see this. Now, before we read what Danielle wrote, let's remember a couple things. Number one, she's in third grade. Number two, this was posted on December 27th.
Right.
We don't have school in the States on December 27th, wherever you happen to live.
Right.
If this was December the 15th or this was January the 4th, we might wonder, gosh, it's still the Christmas holidays. But it is the winter or Christmas holidays for everyone on December 27th, or it's a weekend. I don't know what day it fell on. And she did it at 9:28 p.m. local time.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I shared this back in February, there were about 100 and something reads.
Mm-hmm.
Note that today, 318 different folks or people, some of these could be the same people. I've returned to this several times, so I'm
mm-hmm.
probably, three or four of those read. But over 300 people, more or less,
uh-huh.
have read this. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, think about a traditional classroom when you're right. Now, this could be at the higher education level.
Mm-hmm.
This can be at third grade, as this is.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we traditionally write for in class? We write for you, right? Write for me. Students write for the teacher,
mm-hmm.
an audience of one. And some people are motivated by that, but not everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
And blogging is transformative or potentially transformative because of this audience and this conversation. So here's what Daniela wrote. Well, first of all, on the side, it says about the blogger. And let me point out to you that there's no way, using this free tool called Blogmeister that David Warlick has, that you can reach out virtually and touch Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have her email address.
Wow.
You don't have I don't even know if she has a MySpace account, but you cannot contact her. I mean, we can contact Mark Allness, who is the teacher.
Right.
But you also can't post a comment on this and have it immediately go up there, because the comments are moderated.
Wow.
And so Mark will get an email or whatever and see that something's come in,
and
he'll be able to say, oh, that's great,
uh-huh.
approve.
Uh-huh.
Or if something inappropriate comes
mm-hmm.
in, delete.
Mm-hmm.
So, my name is Danielle. I love to write at Room 12. I also love basketball, reading, drawing, playing with all my friends. I'm a dancing queen. I love dogs too. I love to travel and see my family in California. Now, I would also ask you, don't be put off on using an elementary example, but I'm doing that on purpose to show you how easy this is.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Danielle in third grade
mm-hmm.
can leverage this tool
mm-hmm.
with the help of her teacher, of
mm-hmm.
course,
mm-hmm.
then certainly we can do it in higher education and at really any level.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, my vacation's going great. I'm having play dates with all my friends. For Christmas, I got a foosball table and a GameCube from Santa, but the foosball table was from my grandparents. I also celebrated Hanukkah and had it at my house this year. If I could give one last gift to someone, that person would be my neighbor, because she is one of the nicest people I know. The gift I would give her would be a scarf I made for her. I would like to give her a scarf that I made because it is nicer to make a present to someone than to buy a present. You can make that person feel great if you make something for them. I got a lot of things for my parents, so I want to make them a present. And she goes on and on about how this is a great Christmas. Now, this by itself is very cool, to think that over 300 people have read mm-hmm. what this third grade student has written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been done in a safe way that
mm-hmm.
doesn't put her at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her parents are in the loop about what they're doing and have signed permission slips and,
mm-hmm.
and those kind of things. Now I'm going to click on the comment section, which again I'm saying I think is a fundamental part of Web 2.0 technologies. And I'm going to have to scroll over a little bit here. And let's go to the first comment that was on January 6th, 2006 at 9:21 a.m. I love that, Danielle. That is so sweet because it comes from the heart. Love,
mm-hmm.
Aunt Vicky. Now, I don't know where Aunt Vicky lives,
mm-hmm.
but the point is she could live anywhere
mm-hmm.
where she can get internet access.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have folks engaged in a dialogue and publishing their work for an audience that is much more rich and extensive than merely the classroom teacher. The classroom teacher is still part of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of powerful potential to get people excited about writing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my comment from February 7th, okay, about Danielle. And then Miss Bailey writes on March 8th, hi Danielle, I remember you when you were a little kindergartner and now you're a young lady whose blog is being appreciated all over the country, world.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting to see your work. Keep it up.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So what happened was, in February, I shared this with teachers in Austin. And like I've done today,
mm-hmm.
I read Danielle's entry,
mm-hmm.
and I emphasized how different this is than a traditional writing situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mark, who's the teacher, actually played that recording for his class the next day.
What recording? You
I recorded myself, just like I'm doing
okay,
now,
right.
Telling educators about it,
okay,
and
right.
encouraging them, hey,
right.
go to room 12, go to this website, it's linked,
mm-hmm.
leave a comment for one of the students there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, their class had a debate, I think last week, maybe it was this week, about do the girls get more comments than the boys?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
But when Mark was telling that to his students, Danielle's mom happened to be a parent volunteer and be in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, this is an interaction that wouldn't have happened otherwise. We have a third grade classroom in Seattle. You know, I'm working with teachers in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in 5 years it's not going to be a big deal to say, holy cow, teachers in Texas read and talked about what a third grader in Seattle, you know,
mm-hmm.
talked about. But today it's a very big deal
mm-hmm.
because we are quite isolated in general in what we
right.
do in our classrooms. And so the Web 2.0, or this read-write web, is about conversation, it's about interaction, and it's about what some have called a level 2 use of technology. Alan November talks about accommodation. The Apple Classrooms of Tomorrow research found that's what teachers typically do with technology, is they use it to do the things that they did before,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's fine. That's a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
But what you want them to do is get to that level 2, which Alan November calls information, and I've heard him say that, doing things impossible to do without the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Without the technology, absent the technology, the conversation about David Warlick's new story that we had an international Skype cast about, that these people from around the world have been talking about, would not have been possible. Without this technology, we wouldn't have read what Danielle
mm-hmm.
said, and talked about it, and then impacted their classroom by sharing it with
right.
others. Holy cow, it's transformative. So,
how would that teacher use this? In other words, is he just teaching writing, or to teach as a third grade teacher, do you teach it all? Or
he teaches it all, but
okay.
he's using it with writing, and so his
uh-huh.
students, as they do writing about different things,
right, right.
have the opportunity to publish their work.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to publish it. When I taught fourth grade in the mid-90s, you know, we had a website, but it was quite a bit to,
mm-hmm.
to make it in. We weren't even using FrontPage or Dreamweaver at the time,
mm-hmm.
using Claris homepage.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had to FTP, and there's all
yeah,
this technical
yeah, yeah.
stuff. So, anyway.
Now, how do you control it? How do you control access?
I'm going to show you that.
Okay,
I'm going to show you that. Because when you set it up with a tool, you define the parameters of how the interaction will happen. You can totally turn commenting off. And yesterday, as part of the Florida Educational Technology Conference, the eSchool News organization and the Discovery Education organization recognized myself and three other teachers for winning a national blog contest. And one of them has this EduWonk blog. This is something that I don't have on our site. It's just eduwonk.com. But this is a education policy analysis blog that Andy, trying to think of his last name, Andy Rotherham, as well as Sarah, who was there yesterday, they work for think tanks, and they publish all kinds of things. There's stuff that they are able to write on their blog that they aren't publishing formally through their think tank. They have commenting totally turned off. So this is like kind of traditional broadcasting. It's a one-way deal.
Right.
Although you can, at any time, click email. I guess that's the email to post. But you can email him. So there's interactivity, but it's a little bit different. So when we set up the blog today, you will be able to customize the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Not only look and feel, but also functionality.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be by yourself in this blog? Or do you want this to be a team blog? In fact, we'll set up today a team blog. We'll do a couple. You'll set up one yourself, and then I'll invite you to join one together, and we'll see how that works. And we can decide, just leave it open for commenting, moderate it, you know, how do you want to do it? Who do you want to let moderate it? You know, if all three of us are going to do a blog, do we all want to be administrators, you know, or do we want to let, is Mac the administrator? The rest of us will just be contributors. So there's different levels, but it's not, we don't have to know a lot of technical skills in order to do that. The last story that I'll tell you is about geography. And I studied geography as an undergraduate student, was one of my majors. I love geography. And when I have gone to my blog, which is speedofcreativity.org, if you click on my name, I think at the top of our workshop handout, you'll get here. I've had numbers here on the sides that talk about how many people are subscribed to my blog or just the educational technology things I write, and then how many are subscribed to the podcast. And I've been watching these numbers, you know, grow since I've started to do a podcast last summer. Well, earlier in March, I think on March 6th actually, because I have a, it says when it starts, I found this tool called Cluster Maps. And what this does is it grabs the IP address of whoever is pulling up something on my blog, and it maps it to the world. Now, I have never, any of you been to the Google campus in Mountain View, California, or whatever? Well, I met someone last night that had, and they told me that there at the Google headquarters, they have a rotating, I guess it's an image of a globe, and maybe it's the actual one, and it lights up every time somebody's hitting Google doing a search, and it's color-coded to language. So you can see if Google Japanese, who's searching? You know, people in Japan are, but who in the United States are? It's just that graphical representation.
That is a powerful different thing.
Well, at the bottom of my blog, you can go to the cluster map. And here's the current cluster map for my blog. It says, since March 7th, there have been 5,700 visits.
Wow.
Take a look at where these dots are.
Yeah.
I mean, who's reading me in Egypt? Or in the middle of the Arabian Peninsula, out in Hawaii. Here are, you know, someone in Japan, Korea, not New Zealand, not just North Island. This is Auckland. I think that's Wellington. This, I guess, must be Dunedin, but it could be somewhere else in New Zealand. Folks in Australia. Somebody in the middle of Australia is reading the blog that I'm writing. Well, it's through this community of connections. And I'll show you some tools today. Google is now indexing blogs. So if you're writing about whatever it is that you do and whatever you're interested in, your postings become part of the blogosphere, is what it's called. And there are multiple ways for people to find you. One of the biggest ways people find each other is through commenting. Because if you set up a blog, when you leave a comment, you can tell people, this is my address. Much, much better and safer thing than giving them your email address, because, well, a lot of times it'll say put your email address in, but that's not going to be shared publicly for spam. You know, because when you put your email address out there, generally it's a dangerous thing, but blog tools will hide that. But your website, when you comment, then people say, wow, you know, listen to, you know, what did Bob just comment on about, you know, this great computer science textbook that he's using, or this new programming technique that he's using, and then they click and find you and all the other things that you've written about. So the conversation is how it's found. So people in Iceland, you know, up here in Scandinavia, I mean, we got Norway, Sweden, and Finland, folks that are in Russia, somebody here that is in, I don't know if that is in Armenia. That would be over here. That might be Armenia. This is Turkey. Here's the Holy Land.
Yeah.
You know, here's someone in Morocco, Spain, Portugal, folks in England and Europe. There's a lot of people read, because the dot gets bigger the more, you know, reads that we've had.
Right.
Folks here in the Caribbean. This is in the Dominican Republic. I think that's in Cuba. This is either El Salvador or Nicaragua.
Wow.
These in Mexico. And some have started to appear in Latin America.
Yeah.
This is on the Peruvian-Bolivian border.
Uh-huh.
These are in Brazil. This looks like Uruguay.
Geography very well.
Well, like I said, I was a geographer. there's places here I don't know, though. I mean, I know this is South Africa, and I think that's Cape Town.
Yeah.
But I honestly don't know where these places are. Looks like it's on the... This is in Chile, probably in Santiago. You know, Alaska, Canada. Where is this? This is on,
whoa,
you know, this is northern Canada. Who is that?
Yeah.
So some people have actually replied back.
Now, what are they picking up? They're picking up their IP?
They're picking their IP up dynamically.
Right, right.
Which actually is a good lesson for people to realize anonymity, you know, is not there.
Yeah, I know. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, and so it's grabbing their IP address,
mm-hmm,
and then just sending it into this database. And this is a free tool. It was just free
HTML
for me to grab and put on. So I think it visually represents this idea of a conversation that's taking place, which, like I said, I think is unprecedented.
But you can also link that to any URL, this tool, so you can see how many people are hitting
your
website?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Your college page, your course syllabus.
Wow.
Wonder if anybody's using my syllabus, you know, out in the world. Now, let me say this. If it's behind a login in WebCT, it's going to be a much less interesting, you know,
because
it's going to be limited to just those people who access it. So there's this interesting thing to explore, what kinds of dialogue and interaction do we get from students when the writing that they're doing is actually out there for a public audience and a global audience.
Wow.
Last summer when I taught a graduate and undergraduate technology integration class in Lubbock, had 22 students. We used two books that David Warlick had written about redefining literacy for the 21st century, and he had another one. Has another one called Raw Materials for the Mind. And one of my I don't really want to do this again, but we met on Friday nights and Saturday mornings. Kind of shot the summer.
Yeah.
But one Saturday morning, one of my students was so excited. He said, "David Warlick just commented on my blog." So,
wow.
You know, typically you don't have the textbook author
actually
writing back to one of your students during class. And so, anyway, truly represents to me a fundamental shift in publishing and writing. And so, and here's China, right? And I was listening to an NPR presentation or show on a podcast just yesterday, riding the trolley down to the convention center, about bloggers in China. You know, yes, the government there is putting limitations on things and Google's different or whatever, but I'm telling you, this is stuff that no one is going to be able to keep in the can.
Mm-hmm.
There's good sides and bad sides to this. This is a tool. It is being used poorly, but it can be used in incredibly powerful and constructive ways, in this case, to facilitate a global dialogue. And here I am, you know, a fourth grade teacher now, computer technology staff person and graduate student, living in Lubbock, Texas, and there's a global conversation that's going on. And the thing is, it only has more potential to grow, because I don't think anybody is going to come to me as they might in the past if I was working with a traditional publisher and say, you know, we've liked what you've done, but we're not going to publish you anymore.
Right.
Because I didn't have to ask anyone's permission
mm-hmm.
to create this blog and share it. So,
mm-hmm. wow.
Those are three stories to sort of get us started thinking mm-hmm. about what Web 2.0 is and some of the potential for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you all have any reactions you want to share or think about? Is this...
It's really powerful. Yeah.
Can you see where it's scary? I mean, for schools that are about controlling content and controlling what happens very rigidly,
uh-huh.
This is a very disruptive, you know, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, okay.
Wow.